You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
That was the incredible Carla Ra. I became acquainted with Carla Ra as the movement for solidarity in Honduras took force, and women particularly play an important role. And this song is particularly telling. Guillermo Tell says, you know, the child finally got tired of holding the apple on his head. And I think it talks about a little bit about our growing up, you know, that sense of innocence that we trust fully our entities and governments, and trust that they are doing things on our behalf, that they are serving people. And we never question, you know, why is it? Why is it that if we elect them and they have such a great platform, when they get elected, things sort of don't go the way it's supposed to? And, you know, how is it that a military coup can occur, a new so-called government be installed, and the world just goes on without notice. So I think the people of Honduras are saying, we're seeing the light, we're not buying this, and the resistance continues. Another story that I think is very important and has been widely ignored has been the story of Haiti, a place where military coups had denied the people of Haiti their right to sovereignty. But someone who has not forgotten the story is international journalist Kevin Pina, who has been covering Haiti since the beginning of the coup. So welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Sylvia. I think you bring up a good question about Honduras. I think the Honduran people have been clear about this all the while. And, you know, there have been so many killings now and so many deaths since that last election. Clearly, people who opposed the coup there. And, of course, the Obama administration has turned a blind eye to their suffering and to the repression in that country. And it's just one more scandalous mark on the record of the Obama administration, as far as I'm concerned.
One of the important things is how the level of impunity seems to grow as evidence comes forward and sort of, you know, doesn't hit the light. You've recently uncovered how in Haiti, the United Nations had some evidence that implicate a powerful Haitian senator. Tell us the story.
Well, it's interesting. I received an anonymous package. Sometimes I get this material sent to me by frustrated UN officials. And this is obviously from one of them. And he had in 2005 taken testimony of a woman as a UN official, in his role as a UN official investigator, had taken testimony from a woman who implicated, actually more than implicated, said point blank that one of Haiti's most powerful senators, who's in office today, was responsible for pulling the trigger, for actually murdering a very popular Haitian priest August 28, 1994 in Haiti. That would be Father Jean-Marie Vincent. He was murdered just before Aristide was allowed to return after having spent 3 years in exile. But I received this anonymous package with the video in it and a note that basically said that, you know, I was working with the UN. We took this testimony. It's the only video testimony that exists that says that this powerful Haitian senator was indeed the man who shot and killed the priest in 1994, and the United Nations has not released it, and that it's a travesty of justice, and, you know, I'm sending it to you so that you might someday be able to use it and put it out to the world. In the note that was sent with this anonymous package, it also, you know, said that it felt that it was a travesty of justice, that this was being withheld from the public. And, of course, the senator I'm speaking about is a man named Yuri Latortour, who is very close to the U.S. Embassy. In that letter, the anonymous letter that came with the video testimony that was taken in 2005, he also said that Yuri Latortour, you know, has powerful friends in the U.S. Embassy, and that while the United Nations is supposed to be impartial, he implied that it's clear that they're buckling to pressure from the U.S. Embassy to keep this evidence away from the public.
One of the immediate questions that comes to mind is, why would this evidence be withheld if indeed the UN is in the process of, you know, seeking justice and restoring sovereign rule in Haiti?
Well, as I said, the UN official who anonymously sent this package implied that it was under pressure from the U.S. Embassy that it was being held back because of Yuri Latortour's role. You know, remember that his uncle, he was a security chief, former security chief for his uncle, Gerard Latortour, who was parachuted in from Boca Raton after the ousting of Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide on February 29, 2004. Gerard Latortour, his uncle, became the prime minister, the U.S.-installed prime minister. And Yuri Latortour, who is now this current Haitian senator, was then the security chief for his uncle, who was then prime minister. In that role, he was also accused of having committed human rights violations on behalf of his uncle's regime following Aristide's ouster. Human rights violations in the repression of the Lavalas political movement, which, of course, is Jean-Bertrand Aristide's political party and political movement. Remember, there were tens of thousands of people who were taking to the streets condemning the coup. and there was this tremendous violence met upon them by the Haitian police, who just brutally murdered them in the streets, who just brutally murdered them in their neighborhoods, backed up by the United Nations. And Yuri Latortue was accused at that time of having been involved in many of the human rights violations of the Haitian police against Lavala supporters.
For many of the people who are not familiar with the Haiti story, sadly, because the media tends to ignore this story, tell us about the Lavalas movement, and in particularly, who was Father Jean-Marie Vincent?
Well, that's a great question. Father Jean-Marie Vincent was part of a movement called Petite L'Église, or the Little Church in Haiti. Aristide's movement, the Lavalas movement, came out of the Petite L'Église movement. What had happened was that under Duvalier, maybe people don't know this, but Duvalier was the only head of state given the right by the Vatican to appoint his own bishops. And that was because earlier, Duvalier had actually kicked out the Catholic Church from Haiti because of their involvement, the Jesuits' involvement in a universal literacy campaign, where they had named the literacy book A Taste of Salt. And A Taste of Salt is from the Voodoo lexicon, meaning that when a zombie gets a taste of salt, he reclaims his humanity and turns against his master. And because the Jesuits had named their literacy book after that, Duvalier had kicked the Jesuits and the entire Catholic Church out of Haiti, and it forbid Catholic Mass. And in order for the Catholic Church to return, the Pope then negotiated with Papa Doc Duvalier so that he would then have the right to appoint his own bishops to the Catholic Church. Duvalier then made the hierarchy of the Catholic Church complicity in the corruption of his regime. And so there became this split between what was called the big church, which was a corrupt Catholic hierarchy, and the little church that was being led by priests like Father Jean-Marie Vincent and others, Father Bertrand d'Aristide, who would later become president, Father Antoine Adrien, who would also later become a leader in that movement. These Catholic priests then led what was called community, Christian-based community churches that were called Petite L'Église. They, instead of being trying to repress voodoo, for example, they brought the drums into the Catholic Mass, and they tried this synergy utilizing Haitian culture and liberation theology. And it was those movements, that movement, that defeated the Duvalier dictatorship, forced Duvalier out of the country. They were a large part of that, and would later develop into Lavalas that would catapult Aristide into the presidency in 1990. And so Father Jean-Marie Vincent was one of the seminal leaders of the Little Church movement. He also led campaigns of peasants in the countryside. I remember that he had opposed CARE, the aid organization CARE, because early on he saw that food giveaways and food assistance by organizations like CARE were destroying local production in Haiti of rice farmers and bean farmers. Giving these food giveaways of rice and beans, it was destroying local production, and he opposed that and led several protests of peasants against organizations like CARE, but also against landowners, corrupt landowners who were part of the Duvalier regime. In 1987, he was part of a group called Tête Collée Paysans, the Heads Together Peasant Movement, and in a township of Jean Abel, 136 peasants were massacred of that organization, who had taken on the local landowners who were controlling the best land in that area by virtue of their previous relationships with the Duvalier regime. So he was a tremendous fighter, liberation theology priest, fighter for justice, who worked for the rights of the peasantry, who worked for the rights of the poor in Haiti. And of course, he was brutally assassinated on August 28, 1994. We now have that video testimony of an eyewitness that we've just released today, who says quite clearly that she saw that current Senator Yuri Latortue in Haiti was the man who murdered Jean-Marie Vincent, shot him at point-blank range that day.
One of the questions we never ask is, you know, what has been the role of the international community in this struggle, to suppress the rights of Haitian people?
Well, I mean, all we have to do is look at these upcoming elections that are scheduled for November the 28th. And we can see that the largest political party, the Lavalas Party, has been banned from participation. We can see that they're so desperate to put a rubber stamp on what they have done in Haiti that they're willing to hold elections under conditions where nearly 2 million people are homeless, have been living in the mud from the recent rains, do not have adequate shelter, do not have adequate food, who are being kicked off of land by landowners, being kicked off of land by church groups. U.S. church groups have internally displaced persons, homeless people from the earthquake, who are actually kicking the homeless off of their land. U.S. churches, many of them who bought their land with donations or have expanded their properties with donations that they raised for the earthquake relief, believe it or not. So the international community has, since the ousting of Aristide in 2004, been doing everything they can to legitimize that coup. Of course, it has been a huge propaganda campaign they've waged to try to rewrite what actually occurred, to rewrite Haitian history. But of course, the contradictions keep popping up. You can't just asphalt over. You can't just cover over what the reality is beneath the veneer of propaganda that the United Nations, the U.S. Embassy, the French Embassy, and the Canadian Embassy, the Canadian government, have tried to put over the reality. They can't get away with it because those contradictions will always reemerge, just as we'll see again in these demonstration elections. It's absurd to try to hold elections under these conditions after the earthquake, and it's even more absurd for them to think that they can hold free and fair elections without involving the majority political party or actually banning that party and excluding them from the process. These contradictions are going to keep coming up, and they're just going to get larger and larger. And of course, this upcoming government that comes from these elections will have very little credibility, very little mandate to do anything in that country, and will just lead to more and more paralysis. But really, Bill Clinton and the international community don't care, because they're going to shove down the Haitian people's throat this neoliberal economic model come hell or high water. And that means that they're going to make Haiti a sweatshop mecca. They're going to attempt to re-engineer Haitian social society and civil society so that it more accurately reflects what they want it to reflect, what they want it to be. And of course, the majority of Haitians after the end of this entire exercise are going to be left with sweatshop wages of $3 a day, U.S., the majority of the poor, while of course the wealthy elite in that country, who they've now recast as civil society, are the big winners because they are the very partners of those companies that are coming in to build the sweatshops, to take advantage of the $3 a day cheap labor, virtual slave labor that Haitians will become.
Now, you have done ample reporting on the repression against citizens' resistance. In your film, We Must Kill the Bandits, in your film, Cité Soleil Under Siege, you've been documenting and archiving the incidents of violence. Paint a picture for us today. What is the life of an average citizen like in Haiti today?
Well, you know, just this last week, there were demonstrations against the United Nations because the United Nations mandate, the United Nations military mission, was extended again with $380 million budget for this year alone, if you can imagine. There were protests in Haiti, and they were violently repressed by the United Nations, who took signs of the protesters, tore them up, threw them in ditches at gunpoint, forced people into ditches. Many people were injured, shot rubber bullets, shot tear gas. It was quite a spectacle in the streets of Port-au-Prince this week. This struggle isn't over by a long shot, and I think that the unfortunate thing is that a lot of well-intentioned people, particularly religious people, and people who are considered themselves humanitarians, don't realize that what they're actually participating in is an attempt to penetrate and to change Haitian culture and Haitian reality, political reality, according to the dictates of the United States, France, and Canada. They are participating, I think, unwittingly in this attempt to change the psychology of Haiti, which necessarily means changing the culture of Haiti, and of course part of that is always painting Haitian culture as bad. Haitians is unable to govern themselves. Haitians is always being corrupt. And the flip side of that is that they are the ones who are bringing the professionalization. They are the ones who are bringing the solutions. And that why else would they need to be in Haiti if the Haitians didn't need their help?
And that's a key point, right? This idea that it is always charity rather than solidarity. You know, I mean, there's a difference between this idea that we can save them instead of realizing that sometimes perhaps what we need to do is remove the military power that's emboldening their corrupt governments to enslave their own people. How can people who become aware and informed about this issue become part of the solution?
Well, I think that right now, Congresswoman Maxine Waters in the United States is now working in Congress to try to put pressure on the Preval administration to delay the elections until other political parties, particularly Lavalas, the majority political party, can be included in the process. We've seen that the U.S. Senate also has issued similar reports, much to the chagrin and angst of the United Nations and the Obama administration. So you can look up on Congresswoman Maxine Waters' site. You can find information and ways that you can support her campaign to bring to light this political exclusion. They're actually asking, demanding that the U.S. Government not fund the elections as long as they are exclusive and don't allow the majority political party to participate. There's a campaign, a letter-writing campaign, and a petition campaign that's being circulated by and through Maxine Waters' office. So that's one way that you can help. You can also go to HaitiAction.net, www.HaitiAction.net. There's information on that website. You can also go to www.HaitiInformationProject.blogspot.com for the recent story that we discussed earlier today about the United Nations' role in suppressing this evidence about the murder and assassination of this priest in 1994. There are a lot of ways that people can get involved. Of course, there's CHAN, the Canadian Haiti Action Network, that's doing great work throughout Canada, pressuring the Canadian government also to not fund these upcoming elections, because obviously you can't consider them democratic and inclusive when the majority political party has been banned and barred from participation. How can you have democratic elections under these conditions is another point that's being raised by CHAN. So there are lots of ways for people to intersect and get involved with this issue.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Kevin Pina. His many documentaries include We Must Kill the Bandits, Haiti, The Untold Story, City Soleil Under Siege. There's so many resources you provided. How can people access your documentaries?
They can go to our video channel, which is Long Memory Productions.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. Have a great day.
Take care.
Let's move on to Article 14. Article 14 says that everyone has the right to seek and enjoy asylum from persecution. Haitians, for example. Right in the middle of the Vienna conference, in fact, just as it opened, 87 more Haitians were captured by Clinton's illegal blockade of the island and forcibly returned to their torture chamber. There was a terrorist military regime at the time which was carrying out brutal murders and assassinations. This event was virtually unmentioned in the press, in the national press, unmentioned in the Boston Globe. It did make page 68. It was mentioned in a story on another topic. So that's everyone having the right to seek and enjoy asylum from persecution.
Am I a subject to singe and covetous kings? Cups of wine, we've been drawn over puppets with strings. Swine merchants seeking divine nurture, mine urgency. Imperial, aerial, plated, Syrian mist. Out came a period, hatred, a fear of this place. Bearded man with a snare on his face. And men were brutal Arabs, and the women were sent naked to harems. The mind indulged, the more the story ended. The core conditioning of Orientalist renditions, sword inventions, giving us an entire new meaning to a British Empire, demeaning a civic bent, gimmick trend. Friend assisting and colonized crusaders sing papal cheers in the ears of King Faisal the First. Aching the surf cried for what displacement was worth in dollars, disgracing the birth of a nation under guidance of a foreign leader's dirty fists.
And all this started in 1936. It's the hurt we lift off our backs for the burning gist, the Western civilization's yearning wish. When I speak to a track like horse bitters and reach for Iraq and course when it's peace with a divorce and a hold. Cultural Y2K before we were judged worthy of freedom by UK lineage and represented by Hussein.
People ain't ready for revolution.
C'est ma révente, yo serré. L'EVD est terminé, faut que ça renfesse. Prof génocide, et ça tourne d'un coup son acide. Gade timon yo, pour yo d'un coup c'est plastique. Moi tout ça critique, politique, sans conscience, malhonnête. Assassin, c'est mouvement satanique. Coach Jean-Dominique, Patrice Lumumba, esprit de pour être vivant. A Che Guevara, ta commandé là. Combattre pour la justice, jusqu'à ce que nous gagnions victoire, nous reconnaître qui s'agisse. Pas vivre en panique, si ce manque d'une compourique. Grand-papa nous, c'est pour nous décaper nos existences. Ou kidnapper toute forme dans factory, chita dans silence. Penser ça fait sens, puis abnager nos souffrances. Petit esclavage, on des droits, ou pas égal devant la loi. Sans représentant, yo kidnapper la noir. It's time for revolution, this is our mission. Exécutionner pour de façon, we get no protection. Trop jeune garçon, petit garçon, avec la raison. Son système de pendaison, détrine à poison. Yo asséline tellement, yo fait tout le monde dos à dos. Pour intérêt, yo, j'étais dans un bateau. L'ennemi veut yo traiter nous tant qu'on s'en dalle salaud. Men guess en caco, yo joue avec yo.
People ain't ready for revolution.
Finish by saying that, you know, there's a lot to say about this, but this is not the first time that this has happened. It's important to remember. It's happened many times. The period that we're now in is very much like the 1890s. It's very much like the 1920s. In the 1920s, this was the period of big mass production. That's when the automobile business was taken off and so on. Working people were completely powerless. There were no unions, they had no voice in anything that was going on. Anything they did was at the will of employers.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.